Well, happy Thursday, everybody. Amy here. And just out of the gate, I'm going to let you know that today's episode is going to look a little bit different. I don't have my typical theme song happening because I have something even better. I have my friend Brittany here who's going to open us up with a little bit of music, and then I'll get into what we're going to cover on today's episode. And I'll just tell you that it has to do with the awakening that's happening in our country right now. And I look forward to you hearing every part of this episode so that you can feel equipped and empowered to be the change and be a part of something bigger. And we're all learning and unlearning so much right now. But I definitely want to start with Brittany playing us a little something. So Brittany, do you want to share with everybody what you're going to sing real quick?
Yeah, I'm going to sing Lift Every Voice and Sing. It was actually performed for the first time by 500 school children. Song that was originally a poem by James Weldon, and it's considered the Black National Anthem. And I'm really proud every time I sing it, so I'm gonna sing it now. Lift every voice and sing till earth and death unring. Ring with the harmonies of liberty. Let our rejoicing rise high as the listening sky. Let us march on to victory is won.
Thank you, Brittany. Brittany is actually going to be joining me as one of my things today. We're going to walk you guys through what a conversation looks like with a person of color. If you have someone in your life that you know you need to reach out to tell them, I don't understand what you're going through, but I want you to know that I'm with you. And it's not lost on me that for some of you, this is very new and it might be a tough conversation to have, but Brittany and I just had that phone call last night, and we're going to share with y'all a little bit about what we talked about and just give y'all the encouragement that you need to do it. And you know, Brittany has some really great advice. Then also today I have Dr. Beverly Tatum on, and she's a psychologist that's widely known for both her expertise on race relations and as a thought leader in higher education. And I actually posted her book on my Instagram the other night because once I found out I was interviewing her, I thought, oh my goodness, I need to start reading her book. I had had a few other books that I had started, but I put those down to engage in hers, and I'm so glad that I did. And it's called Why Are All the Black Kids Sitting Together in the Cafeteria? And Other Conversations About Race. I encourage you guys to download that or get it if you can. Or she has an awesome TEDx talk that she did for TEDx Stanford that you can check out. It's about a 10-minute TEDx, and it's really, really good. But you'll hear her on today's episode, and I hope you'll check out some of her work after that. And then another thing today is going to be the pastor of my church, Pastor Matt Smallbone, and we're going to discuss mostly white privilege. We talk about a few other things, but sometimes, or I know for some people, it might be hard right now to realize, oh shoot, I have white privilege. And we'll talk you through that and know that you're not alone. If you're just now discovering your privilege, that's amazing. You're discovering it and you're headed in the right direction. And we're all trying to navigate this territory. For some of us, it's completely new and unknown. And I'm just thankful for the people that I have on today's episode that are going to help get us going in the direction that we need to be going. And then lastly, the fourth thing I'm going to cover is just some self-care tips for everybody. My friend Lisa sent out an email about it, and I just am going to be sharing with y'all some tips she put out there, because there's so much heaviness right now. And I think in order to keep our bodies and our minds prepared for all the information we're learning or unlearning, or in the ways we want to show up and be there for people, if we're not taking care of ourselves, then we are not going to be any good to anybody else. So with that said, that is today's episode, and we'll go ahead and get started.
First thing.
I asked the pastor of our church, Church of the City, Matt Smallbone. Hey.
What is up?
I asked him to come by and chat with us for this episode, because on Sunday, you know, I don't know how early y'all plan messages, or if you kind of had to. I mean, I certainly did this week's episode. I had to pivot and realized I had another episode planned, but I had to scratch it and do what I thought was right for the moment. And that was this. And before church started, you kind of came on, and this is all virtual, of course, we're watching church on YouTube, but you came on and had a special message at the beginning, because it's obviously you couldn't ignore what's happening.
Yeah, so we've been filming church sometimes 2 weeks before we've had it. So this week was one of those weeks where we had to pivot. It was pretty clear from time to time something comes up that kind of impacts the national zeitgeist, that is important that we chat about things. That service had actually been pre-recorded 2 weeks earlier. And so Friday night, I found myself just trying to write something. I mean, this is hard. I'm an immigrant from Australia. I feel the weight of Dr. King's words, if you've ever read his prison letters, about just the unavailability of white pastors in the South to kind of join the movement, the civil rights movement. Those words are haunting to me. That in our time, that I would be someone, you know, a white person of considerable privilege, though an immigrant, that I'd sit on the sidelines. So I sit with my laptop and research and just try and understand who our people are. I mean, our church, we got some really, there's some really kind, sophisticated thought around issues of race among our people. And so you're just trying to meet people where they are. And I really labor over those words. It actually caused me a lot of anxiety getting that words right, because words are powerful. When you are gifted the responsibility of a microphone, they're even more powerful. And you know, I have many friends of color, all of whom are hurting tremendously. And I think I mostly have them in mind as I work on being brave and just putting in the extra work to get the messaging right.
I think it's time for people to speak up, and we can't be silent about it anymore. And so you addressing that at the beginning of church, you know, we had our kids sitting there with us, and we had to pause it because you were in the middle of talking about what had been happening, and our kids, we had shielded them from the news because it's brutal. They don't, yeah. We need to discuss things with them, but also it's hard for us. And we've known since our interracial adoption training, okay, you're white, your kids are black, there's no way you're ever going to understand things they're going to experience when they are older.
It's terrifying, right, for you. So I'm thinking through you guys as I'm writing these things, just trying to be helpful.
Well, Stevenson, right away, I mean, we had to pause it because we wanted to hear everything you had to say and we didn't want to miss it. So we paused it, and they started, Stashir and Stevenson were asking questions, and we explained some things, and Stevenson, just with all the conviction in the world, was like, wait a second, I do not understand. God made us equal.
Yeah.
And he had his hands in the air like, equal. And he was very passionate about it. And I thought, you know what? You're right.
And I know that parents in particular, these horrible stories that keep surfacing of violence towards people of color is unacceptable. Part of being a Christian is being patient and kind, but I mean, that's truly what love is. Paul defined it as that, patient and kind, but the biblical definition of patience has so much teeth to it. I think we've changed that word to mean like Christians should be nice or something, but biblical patience, when you study the Greek, it's actually about being able to stay under the weight of pressure and be able to handle difficult things for a longer amount of time before you explode in anger. And so I think in this moment, Christians are being called in particular to not just kind of champ out and retreat from the pressure of this, but to fully engage and be willing to shoulder it, especially those of us with white skin, to kind of be protectors. You know, love is patient and kind. It also protects as well, to be protectors of those who need it in this moment. Be truly global neighbors. I mean, I want to be, you know, super clear. I'm not an expert on this. You know, psychologists talk about the Dunning-Kruger effect, which is, you know, the more you know about something, the more you understand that you lack the knowledge. So sort of like rookies at anything really believe they're geniuses at stuff, and it's not until you've really put in the hours. And so I'm a good 5 to 10 years into researching, you know, issues of race. What does it mean for us in East Nashville to be responsible neighbors in a rapidly gentrifying neighborhood? Like, what does that actually look like? It's a really, really complicated question. And then so we're just trying to, you know, at the very least, I think, and I know this is difficult for some people, but I think we need to acknowledge some privilege, those of us with white skin, that we experience. I remember we hosted a panel one MLK Sunday. I don't know if you were there yet that year, but Dr. Leslie Collins from Fisk University looked at me and asked me this question. She said, "What's it like to be white?" We started talking about privilege, and she said, "Well, I got a question for you." She said, "What's it like to be white?" I had no answer for it. I'd never thought about it before. And I said, "I'm not sure if I've ever thought about it." And she goes, "Well, that's the privilege of that." And I think people think one of the reasons the idea of white privilege is hard for people is because they think it means it's an assumption that white people don't have a hard life. And that's just not true. Everybody's had a hard life. The idea of privilege means that your skin color hasn't made your life kind of any more difficult. And so I think, you know, as a starting point, and I have smart friends who would say you don't want to hang any kind of intellectual argument on the idea of white privilege. But for me, it was a starting point, because I didn't think about things like privilege in my 20s. I just enjoyed the privilege of it. I know you'll have listeners who will think it's probably not a thing, but here's how I think about it. I think it is either a thing, or every person of color has this kind of secret email server where they've communicated with each other, say, "Hey, let's tell these stories. Let's make up these stories about how we get stopped by the police all the time, and how when we're teaching our kids how to drive, we the first thing we teach them is how to put their hands on the steering wheel." I think this is either the most incredibly well-organized messaging coup by people of color to make this stuff up, or every single person of color friend of mine shares these stories of a life of disadvantage that I've never had. I was chatting with a country music mate of mine yesterday. His band is mostly white guys, but one of their players, their drummer, is a black dude. And the way bus call works for folks outside of Nashville, basically your bus pulls up at the nearest Kroger to wherever the biggest star in the band lives. And everyone piles on. It's usually at midnight because you're heading to Sheboygan or somewhere. And they noticed that their drummer was always getting there 20 minutes early. So bus call at midnight, random Kroger, which is a supermarket chain in Tennessee. Is that America wide? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there's Krogers around.
Kroger or Walmart.
So insert any grocery store.
Right.
Yeah, HEB, shout out.
So, yeah, if you ever want to meet someone famous, hang out at Kroger parking lots at midnight Kroger. And see who's on the bus.
Yeah.
But his drum would show up early, dressed kind of business casual, you know, wearing a collared shirt, and you know, everyone else shows up ready just to sleep, wearing their, you know, their bus pajamas, which is like tracksuits or something. And they eventually asked him, like, why are you dressed so well for bus call? And they said, "Well, I've got to imagine I need to buffer in time in case I get pulled over, and also need to look kind of like a professional so that I'll be able to get here in case I get pulled over." And those are things I've never had to worry about. And the stories are just consistent. I just hope people will take this cultural moment that we're in to listen to people. If all of this seems crazy and insane, I just encourage you to take a couple of years to diversify your friendships and listen to stories. And you'll just see the sad consistency of disadvantages that people of color are feeling. And then learn. You know, there's tons of reading you need to do. I know you've got other experts better at this than me on this topic, but learn. I think as Christians, the spiritual response is to lament. Connect your heart to this. You know, realign our hearts.
Say you had someone that came to you and was like, "I don't know, I'm still wrestling with this idea of white privilege." Like, I've, again, like you said, I've had X, Y, and Z happen to me.
Yeah.
And there's some very real concerns. Like, have you ever read Hillbilly Elegy?
No.
It's
I've heard of it, though.
It's a fascinating book about a young white guy raised in the Appalachians and ended up, you know, going off to college. We're just telling the story of his life. But there's a lot of reason for concern in lower class whites as well. They're the only group in America of people whose life expectancy is currently decreasing. So there's very real concern all around, and it's you know, not to say that the idea isn't that none of us with white skin don't have any problems. It's just that the skin color doesn't make life any more complicated for
us. And I love the way you said that the first time, and I'm glad you said it again, because I think if someone were to come to you and say, hey, you know, Pastor Matt, I'm just wrestling with this.
Which I have all the time.
Right. So
people leave
you
our church.
Personally,
people have left our church.
Okay.
Over the use of it's a powerful phrase.
Over the use of what?
The word white privilege.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well, I was gonna say, my encouragement was gonna be like, if you feel that wrestle, to me, that's affirmation. Work needs to be done.
Yes.
But I guess people can also look at it the other way and say, oh, nope. Not ready to work. I'm going to walk away from this.
Yes, and I think the truth is we can't be part of repairing or reimagining a world that we don't understand. And part of this process is understanding that repairing on the part of white people, part of the solution is going to be giving something up, not just leaping in to save the day. And that is what's in front of us. We have a chance to heroically serve and protect.
Because as a mom, what I want to do for Stevenson and Stashira, I want to protect them because I love them. Mm-hmm. But we don't have to know everybody that we're, if we're called to love others. You may be like, well, I don't really know any people of color to protect. Well, that might be an invitation for you to try to grow in that area and find some people to diversify your groups. Or also, who cares if you know any? Like, love strangers.
Right.
Like, do what you can to protect them without them maybe never even knowing.
There's some real responsibility in the global village of loving your neighbor. One of the upsides to globalism is that everyone is now our neighbor. You're not trying very hard if you can't find someone to befriend who doesn't look like you wherever you live. And it's a challenge, and it'll take humility. But I just want to say to your listenership, like, if you're starting off on this journey and you don't understand everything that's going on right now, like why people might be riding, you know, Dr. King would say ride is the language of the unheard. I would just encourage you to make a new friend or two this week and just ask them about their lives. And you'll be amazed at the consistency of their stories in how they would answer the question, what's it like to be black? Mm-hmm. They will actually be able to answer that for you. Whereas you may be lost on what's it like being white.
Yeah. And I think we can probably leave people with that question. It's the very question you were asked. And it was the first time, I assume that was the first time you'd been asked it because you had never thought about it before.
Yeah, it was the start of a journey of it moving. I love everybody. I really do. And I'm cheering everybody on. But it was a question that moved this from my head, being an intellectual exercise, moved it to my heart and started realigning things. I started feeling pain. You've got to be willing to feel pain to engage with this. Yeah. That's part of maturing as a person, allowing the world to access your heart. Indifference isn't a fruit of the spirit, you know? Indifference isn't, I'm sorry I'm talking Christian here, but it's the
Don't apologize.
It's the language I know best, yeah. That's all. But it's not, you know, indifference. This is about patience and kindness, protection, you know?
I feel like anything that you've said, no matter what faith anybody is that's listening, can be something they can take in and never apologize for how you deliver something or who you are. And I want to leave listeners with, what has your life been like as white or black? And I hope if of any of my listeners of color that you have the opportunity to share what your life has been like, because that's the only way we're going to know.
Well, you and I speak in front of microphones as a major part of our living, and the responsibility is high.
Oh, yours is way higher.
And words, and words. Oh, matter. Yeah, I'd trade lice in a second with you, Amy, for sure. Words matter. I get recognized. People think I'm Bobby Bones all the time. I got these fancy glasses.
He does.
And it started.
Yes, Pastor Matt has curly hair, which Bobby has when it grows out, and then he has black rim glasses. Oh, my kids, like our first time we took them to church when they got to America a couple years ago, we walked in and they're like, Bobby?
The confusing bit is my last name's Smallbone. So I get stopped in lines and I hear them say, love your work, Bones. And that was my nickname in high school. So it's all very confusing.
Oh, and you're like, oh, thank you.
Yeah.
And they're like, listen.
Yeah, I didn't know being a pastor made you a rock star.
Yeah.
Yeah, I loved it for a week. Then I realized what was going on.
Awesome. Well, thank you for taking the time to share with us kind of what you're working through and then what you're going to lead our community to do, because I think it's important and I appreciate it.
Love you, Amy.
Second thing.
Okay, so for this thing, I want my super talented friend, Brittany Spencer, to join us and talk about what it looks like for us to reach out to people of color. And to be totally honest, I don't know Brittany terribly well, but she is in my life and have seen her. She works at the turnip truck where I get my beet juice when I was drinking it a ton. And I got to tell you, nobody made it as good as Brittany. And she was just always such a joy when I went in there. And then come to find out she was a fan of Pimpin' Joy, which was super cool. And she's wearing her hoodie right now. And then you ran into my brother-in-law like at an airport. And he didn't know you, so he didn't recognize you, but he recognized your sweatshirt and saw, hey, Pimpin' Joy, that's my sister-in-law. And so then you hung out with him. And then we would see each other, I guess, again at the store. And then I thought, oh my gosh, like you're stunning inside and out. And we were doing the Empowered Women campaign. And I reached out to you and asked, hey, would you want to take some pictures for this? And you were so down and you came right over. And it was just super cool. So you're in my mind, and obviously with everything going on, I'm thinking of all the different people in my life that are really affected right now.
Right.
So I have been making it a point to reach out to each person. Mm-hmm. And whether I know them super well or whether I know them sort of well. And I love that. I think last night when I called you to just tell you, hey, I don't understand what you're going through, but I want you to know you're not alone, I was a little nervous to do it because, again, I didn't know. It's like, I don't want her to receive this the wrong way. And I'm not trying to just do this for, nobody knows that I'm doing this. I'm really just trying to connect with her.
Yeah.
On this, because it's important. And you were so gracious and kind. And I know that I need to be more intentional about the relationships I have, especially with two Black children. Like, why I haven't been more proactive about making sure that I have more diverse relationships is on me. And so I've always felt a really easy connection with you, but never taken it to the next level. And I have other friends that I've lost touch with that now maybe this will bring us back together, because for whatever reason, we lost touch. But it's important, I think, for people to evaluate and assess who's in my life. Like,
yeah.
How, if I'm really confused in what's going on in the world right now, maybe it's because I'm not talking to some of the right people that are really feeling the hurt and the pain and that have been feeling it for years.
Yeah.
And years and years and years. This is not new, but it is something about this time around is different. And I'm here for it.
Yeah.
And I want you to share with people. And then, of course, I got your permission to share our conversation. But I want you to share with people what you told me last night when I reached out. You said you had another friend that reached out to you as well and kind of made an assumption.
Just like a handful of my white friends that reached out to me just during the time of the Nashville rally and the protests. And just reaching out, just kind of like what you did, just saying, hey, just reaching out, just letting you know I stand with you. I don't get it all the time, and I will never understand what it is that you experience or may face. He assumed that like it was a lot of people, and I just thought it's actually not a lot of people who've reached out to me. And I'm not looking for a whole lot of people to reach out to me. The ones that do, I'm so grateful for those that have reached out and just said, hey, just checking in, just, you know, how can I be there? How can I be a part? Because sometimes those conversations lead to this conversation we're having now. And it's not necessarily resulting in a public conversation, but it's just an ongoing conversation, which I think is always the goal. And I just thought, and I said, man, the most significant thing that any of my white friends can do is talk to their white friends, talk to their family members. I think sometimes race can be so hard for white people to talk about. But if we just, if white people just kind of talked about it more and actually had the hard conversations and advocated more in the rooms that I'll never probably be privy to, and the conversations that people won't have because they don't want to say it while a black woman is there, you know, they don't want to say it while a black person is there. But I'm not privy to those conversations. Those are the times to stand up the most. So when I talk to my white friends, I'm always saying, hey, you have a task. And the task is checking in with your black friends when something happens like this, because it really is traumatic. When I heard about George Floyd, it was traumatic. When I watched the video, and many black people haven't watched the video, and that's a whole other separate issue, and whether or not, you know, do we keep reliving the trauma of watching black people, black bodies lie on the ground and die or get killed? The video of Ahmaud Arbery is traumatic. Eric Garner, traumatic. And we just replay that stuff in our heads. It's not that it's just such a sad thing. We see in the context of that could be me. That could be my brother. We see the history of all of this. We see hundreds of years of just disregard for black life. So it's not just a video, but the most important thing a white person can do is talk to their white friends.
And I think too, just to make sure, I wanted you to bring up that one of your friends assumed you were getting several messages. And again, you're not looking for tons of messages, but I want to be careful for everybody listening to maybe not use that as one of your excuses, because I feel like that's a thing we may have in our head is like, oh, I'm sure they've already gotten messages. Like, I don't need to do it.
Right.
Or I'm sure they're getting bombarded right now. Like, it's fine. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't need to speak up. But that's a lie. Whether they're getting tons of messages or not, it doesn't matter. You still should speak up and make sure that they know that you're with them. I even had my best friend from high school sent me a text message today. I'm white, obviously, but my kids are not. And she sent me a note. I'm pulling it up. And we had a good conversation the other day, but this stuff didn't come up. So that's why she starts it off by saying, by the way, because I feel like she was like, okay, I need to say this to her. She said, I stand with your children. I stand with you. Black lives matter. Your children matter. We didn't get to talk much about this, but I'm here for you. I'm on this journey and have been for some time. Stashira and Stevenson are beautiful black children and they matter. And so she took the time as my friend to make sure just to recognize, I mean, I don't, just like you, I didn't need that from her, but it's like, oh, awesome. She recognizes my children matter. And, you know, when it comes to the Black Lives Matter versus All Lives Matter, share with me how it makes you feel when people try to disregard the Black Lives Matter because they're on the defense that, well, all lives matter.
It feels like cheap avoidance. That's what it feels like. It feels like an easy way to dismiss an issue, to absolve yourself from it. It feels like there's no problem here. We all matter. It feels like a refusal to share space and to recognize that there is inequality, that there is just a huge level of unfairness that has always been always been present in the country that we live in. And so it's when I hear all lives matter, it sounds like, well, everyone's life matters, and the fact that you think that your life isn't as valued as mine, that's something that you need to work out. But what we've decided is that all lives matter, and it's a dismissal. Mm-hmm. The genius and the evil of white privilege is that it keeps people not understanding each other. It keeps people from not being empathetic. So while I'm struggling, white people have no idea. I was explaining to one of my friends the other day, like, just one of my white friends, I love her, we talk all the time, and we've been friends for years, but we talked about beauty standards, and that's what I said. Yeah, you know, growing up, there weren't people that looked like me in magazines, there weren't people that looked like me on TV screens, and when I did see someone that was black, sometimes it was always the lighter-skinned people, and she literally said, I never thought about that. She never once thought about how her culture is represented through society, through media, through art, through images, through anything, because it's always there. And that standard always said, this is the societal standard. This is what beauty looks like. This is what being right looks like. This is what a good life looks like. This is what it looks like when you are this kind of person. And that's the genius and the evil of privilege, is that it keeps an entire group of people completely disassociated from the harmful and tragic realities of people of color.
Right.
And so when we say Black Lives Matter, people who say, oh, no, all lives matter, they don't understand what's happening on the other side.
Yeah, I saw an analogy on Instagram or somewhere, and I know there's several analogies out there, but I'll just paraphrase this one real quick. Talked about how if your neighbor's house was on fire and your house was not, and you went out to your porch and you saw the firefighters putting out the fire at your neighbor's house, but you were like, yo, excuse me, my house matters too.
Yeah.
And you're trying to get the firefighters to come tend to your house that is not on fire right now.
Yeah.
You would never do that. You mm-hmm. would be like, oh, wow, yeah, that house matters. In this situation, this house matters.
It's deeply rooted in so much of what we do in society and how we viewed the opportunities that we're giving, the access that we're granted. It's hard because today systemic racism is everywhere. It's infiltrated everywhere. And trying to explain that sometimes is, I think for me at least, very challenging to some of my white friends. But I always tell them there's Google. There's so many books. We can absolutely have conversations. And sometimes those conversations look like, hey, what was it like for you growing up in this school? I remember you told me that you grew up in a place where your family was the only Black family in that neighborhood. What was that like? Just asking really practical questions sometimes is really helpful. Just finding ways to be empathetic and to step outside of your shoes and recognize that someone else has a life. Someone else doesn't feel like they are valued or that they matter. They don't feel like there's always space made for them. Stepping outside of yourself and recognizing that other people deserve a turn. Other people deserve equality. Other people deserve fairness. When a Black person says they will pull, when they get pulled over, they fear for their life, that's not something to overlook. No, I've had 3 weird encounters when I've been pulled over, and it's terrifying.
I'm sitting here listening to you, and I literally, I've been pulled over since I was 16. Well, you know, a good amount of times. Mm-hmm. And I have never once feared for my life. I literally cannot relate to that at all whatsoever. So boom, perfect example of privilege right there without me ever even thinking about it. Until right now, as I'm talking with you.
Yeah.
All those times, that was my privilege. The fear I didn't, what I was scared was, how am I gonna pay the ticket? Is my dad gonna get mad at me? That was my fear. It wasn't what's gonna happen to me, or am I gonna get hurt? Am I gonna go to jail for no reason? Am I going, and it's not all, please hear me, please listeners, hear this with an open mind and a heart. We're giving examples. We're not saying that all police are this way and every circumstance is this way. We're talking about the fear that people have given what has happened to others. And when I don't care if it's happened to one person or 500 people, if you're someone that knows it's happened to someone because of their color of your skin and you happen to have that color of skin, you're going to be scared that it could happen to you.
Absolutely. My dad was a correction officer for, I think, almost 25 years before he retired. And my like personal awakening to anything involving justice or social justice or really the fear of being Black, for me, that was when Trayvon Martin happened. And I went to my dad and I asked him questions. And then I think a few years later, Mike Brown happened. I went back to my dad. I was like, Dad, it was an officer this time. How do you feel? And we had those conversations. And he told me how he felt. He told me how disgusted he was. He talked about his perspective as someone who retired working in law enforcement. He talked from his perspective as a dad. All of my siblings, they all live. I mean, we all live in different places. I'm the only one that lives in Tennessee, and I live the furthest away from home. For me, home is Baltimore, Maryland, which is a predominantly Black city. Moving to Tennessee scared the crap out of my family. They asked me, why don't you move to Atlanta? And I said, I don't want to go to Atlanta, Daddy. I write country music. I want to go to Nashville. And he fears for me all the time. Every single phone call, my dad tells me a few things. He always says something like, make sure you put your seatbelt on or something like that. And then he goes on to like just give me like tips about like if I'm ever in danger. My family is terrified. When I told my mom and sister that I was going to the protest on Saturday, they were terrified. And the first thing they said is, "You live in Tennessee. You live in the South." That's a reality for my family. That is an absolute reality. And I'm not an isolated incident. You didn't know any of these things about me. We never talked about it. So you didn't know that I was going to bring all this stuff up. So it's not a prepared thing. This is a real thing for people that look like me. And even if you haven't even for people who look like me, people who are Black, people who are brown, people who, even if you haven't experienced an injustice, you carry that fear because we always feel like people that look like us are targeted, or that we're such an easy target to just disregard, to not care about. We don't matter as much. We're constantly just reminded of that. And now when we talk about the media, well, the media for so many of us, the media is just real people. It's a person with a camera phone who just so happened to have their phone out at the time something terrible was happening, or they intentionally caught something on film. That's for me as a millennial, that's our news. A lot of times it's just firsthand testimonies of saying, "Hey, I saw this crazy thing today. Look at this." And when you see those images, you don't see just George Floyd. You don't just see Ahmaud Arbery. You see yourself. You see your children. You see your family members, your friends. You see anybody that's within close proximity to you. And you take that burden, and it's just traumatic. And we walk around thinking, this could be my last day. Something really terrible can happen.
I appreciate you opening up and sharing with me, with us. And I just hope that others will take that time, and that we learn from this, that we need to take the time to hear people out and try to understand and realize, yes, like, this is what Black Lives Matters is all about.
Yeah.
And I think if you have some real conversations with people, like we are with Brittany right now, you'll get it. I mean, it's good, and you'll have to continue to learn, continue to follow certain accounts on Instagram, maybe even unfollow. What books can you download? What things can you be Googling to read? And I just feel like it's so important right now. But since Brittany was on to just be about the friend thing, I would say, gosh, it's just as simple as reaching out to someone that's in your life that you know may need to hear from you and hear you say, "Hey, you matter."
Mm-hmm.
Simple as that. It's two words.
Mm-hmm. And actually hear them when they tell you why they feel like they don't matter.
Mm.
Not with defensiveness, not with something that we heard while stuck in an algorithm, but just truly hear the testimonies of people that we say we love and we care about. We can't love people and then decide, "Well, I don't have to deal with that part of you. We disagree." No, this is a very real thing. When someone's fearful for their life, that's a very real thing, and we can't disregard that.
We were talking last night about Be the Change.
Yeah.
Because I had Stevenson write Be the Change, and mm-hmm. we thought, well, this could look cute on a shirt. Stashira did the Empowered Women's shirt with her handwriting, and she loved it. And I felt like Stevenson was a little left out. And I mm-hmm. thought, okay, buddy, step up to the plate. It's your turn. Be the change. So he worked so hard, and his handwriting's so great. And he's only 9 years old. And, you know, I wanted to make sure and run by Brittany that the Shot Forward was going to put up these shirts, Be the Change, in different skin tones, from dark to light. Mm-hmm. And we just wanted to make sure that the messaging was okay, our hearts are in the right place, and that we knew it would be predominantly for white people to wear. I sent Brittany the mock-up.
It's a very, very, very cute shirt.
But you said, "I love this. The colors work so well together. The font really gives a beautiful meaning to the message. It's childlike and innocent. Feels like the font communicates that empathy and acceptance. It doesn't have to be so complicated." And that was encouraging to hear.
So I love that you're putting so much thought into this. I really do.
Well, it's important. I know that a lot of my listeners are white, and a lot of the people that shop at the Shop Forward or Shop Espoir are white. And I want them to join us in this effort to mm-hmm. be part of the change and to be the change. And so, yeah, we'll see, you know, how it's received. But I think it could do well and make a big difference for those out there that are on the front lines of this and have been for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And I just appreciate you coming on to talk with us and singing at the beginning.
Yay. Thank you so much for having me. I really love what you're doing. I think it's bold. I'm grateful that you're doing it. I'm grateful to know somebody that is putting in the work and journeying through, because this is truly a journey. You know, when we talk about be the change, it really is a journey. You don't just wake up and you're changed.
Right.
It's just constantly working at something until we hopefully get it right.
Even with Pimpin' Joy and Empowered Women, we like to create shirts that people can put on, and it's a conversation starter.
Yeah.
But also a reminder to the person wearing it. Oh yeah, I need to be the change. Who can I reach out to today? Who can I say hi to today? Who can I check on today?
Yeah.
What can I read today to educate myself? What can I post today to encourage others? Can I talk to some of my other white friends today? When I'm wearing this shirt, is another white friend going to ask me, what's that shirt about? And then, yeah, that'll give me an opportunity to talk to them about what's been going on in the news lately. Like, that's what we hope to be the change is for. So can you tell people, Brittany, where they can find your music?
Yes, you guys can find all my little songs on Spotify and all the iTunes and Apples, all those things. My name is Brittany, Brittney Spencer, Spencer.
Yeah.
That's on everything.
Yeah. She's at Brittney Spencer on Instagram, but then yeah, to find her music, she's there. So at least follow her and then you'll start seeing some of the music stuff she posts and you're gonna be like, okay, I get it. Like she's a star.
Aw, you're too kind, Amy. Thank you so much.
I'll see you very soon.
All right. See ya.
Okay, Dr. Tatum, super excited to have you here with us for this important time and conversation. And with that, a conversation seems to be something that is a word I have over and over of, I need to be having conversations with my kids. I need to be having conversations with my friends. So I would like to hear from you. How do we start these conversations?
When white people are talking to their white friends, often it is not a topic they're talking about very much, except when something like what's happening right now, you know, they've seen George Floyd's murder on the news, the protests are happening. It's hard not to be talking about these questions. What I find is that many of my white students over the years in the places where I've taught and many of the people who come to my workshops have lived a long time without much practice at having these conversations. And so when they do want to have the conversations, it feels very awkward, in part because they've grown up thinking, I'm not supposed to mention race. I'm not supposed to notice race. And so it almost feels like you're breaking a societal rule. And he will tell me that that's how they sometimes feel. And they worry very much that they might say or do the wrong thing, that it might be perceived by someone else as saying something racially prejudiced, or, you know, they might just make some mistakes that cause awkwardness in a conversation. That's especially true if they're talking to a person of color. But even if it's a white person talking to another white person, there may be fear about that. But it's not hard to start a conversation to simply say, I've been watching the news. It's very upsetting to me. I wonder how you feel about what you're seeing.
Kids, things are going to be different depending on their age and what information they can handle. But I could see how, yeah, that could be an easy way to just see where someone is in their thoughts and then breaking that, what we were raised with, which is the silence. I think you're right. You know, when we were told so long, you know, just be kind to people. Don't have hate in your heart. Don't see color. People meant well, but actually that's what we need to unlearn.
Yes, I sometimes use as an example a conversation with a preschooler. Let's imagine there's a white parent with a white child and they're in a grocery store. And maybe they live in a largely white community, so it's unusual to encounter a person of color. And so let's imagine this three-year-old is in the grocery store with mom and spots a dark-skinned person. That child might out of curiosity say, "Mom, look at that person. Why is their skin so dark?" And you can imagine that that mom or dad might be embarrassed in that moment. And the response might be to say, "Shh," you know, and not to answer the question, but simply to silence the child in what feels like an awkward moment. But the message to the child is, we're not supposed to notice, we're not supposed to talk about this, there's something wrong with what I just said. We could imagine a different kind of scenario, same scenario, but a different kind of response, where maybe the parent would say, "Oh, because people come in different colors. Just like people have different hair color or eye color, they have different skin color," and move on. It doesn't have to be a big deal, but there's so much historical reluctance to it because of the legacy of racism in our society. It feels like a very toxic subject, and many people respond by simply trying to hush the conversation rather than engage it.
I've been consuming so much information lately, just trying to take in as much as I can, because I've realized, okay, I have a platform, but even if you don't have a platform, you still need to speak up.
You're using your platform, and it's a wonderful thing that you are, but to your listeners, everybody has a platform of some kind. We all have a sphere of influence. And so some people's sphere is very big, some it's more, you know, it's smaller, but we all influence other people. And each of us can think about, how am I using my sphere of influence to bring about change?
What are the next steps on where we can go from here if people are wanting to do more?
Well, especially for listeners who feel like they don't know enough, certainly working to educate yourself is an important first step. And as you said, there are lots of resources, many more today than there were in the past. Good books that people can read, articles, things online, social justice education websites, books, multicultural and books that are really useful to read with kids. As you said, parents are often busy, but even busy parents sometimes will sit down and read a book with a young child, and there are lots of them that are really helpful. And if people are wondering, well, how would I know which ones are good? There's a great website called socialjusticebooks.org, which can give you lots of good suggestions. Educating oneself, unfortunately, many people don't really have a good knowledge base about the history of racism in our society. We, of course, all have heard about slavery, but if that's all we know, we're missing a lot of information. And so even contemporary, there's some great books about current events. One of my favorites that I'm recommending right now is not only mine, but How to Be an Anti-Racist by Ibram Kendi. Mm-hmm. It's a great one. Or another one is White Fragility by Robin DiAngelo. But these are places where people can start to think about, what have my own experiences been, and how have they shaped how I view the world, and what can I do differently? Gathering with other people to have those conversations can be really helpful. And someone might say, well, I live in an all-white community. You know, I want to talk to people of color. Well, there's value in that, of course, but let's not minimize the benefit that comes from talking to other white people who are helping to educate each other in this journey.
Well, I just appreciate you taking the time to come on with me so much. When I heard you were going to join us, I was like, oh, really? And I even messaged some friends that I knew were reading your book, and they were geeking out. So pretty cool to have you on. So
thanks for the invitation.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And I hope you have a good rest of your day. I'm sure you're very busy right now.
That's good. Indeed. Yeah. Well, thank you for your courage.
Thank you so much for all you do.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Before I get into the fourth thing, which is going to be some self-care tips or ways for you to be mindful about creating space and relaxing so you're not all emotionally frazzled, because then you're not going to be able to handle everything that's happening in the world and all this new information that you might be taking in. And just want to say that it's not lost on me that the first three things, some of the things that were said may not sit well with some of you, and that's okay. I'm open to hear what you have to say. We're open to discussion and conversation, and you can feel free to reach out to my pastor. He's super amazing, very smart and kind. On Instagram, he's at Matt Smallbone, And then my friend Brittany, she's at Brittany Spencer. I hope you follow her. If you've got questions for her, you can ask. You can check out some of her music. And then with Dr. Beverly Tatum, she's not on Instagram, to my knowledge, but she has so many great resources. Start with her TEDx talk that's free on YouTube, or go ahead and download her book. But she is super knowledgeable. And again, depending on where you are in your journey, today's episode may or may not have been a lot of information. I don't know. And you may be asking yourself, okay, well, what can I do? I don't know where to start. But I do feel like each person today shared some good ways for you to start. Also, I know with Brittany, I brought up the Be the Change shirts. And at the time that I recorded with her, I didn't know a lot of the info for those of like what exactly we were doing, what we were going to make. Again, I feel like everyone's just been trying to figure out and be super thoughtful about it and not rush things along. But we're finally ready. The Shot Forward launched what the plan is. And Stevenson did the artwork for these Be the Change shirts, but that's not the only shirt option available. There's also a You Are Worthy. And the ink on those, there's multiple colors that range from dark, dark brown to pale, pale pink, representing all the different skin tones. So there's Be the Change, You Are Worthy, and then these super cute white ones with tie-dye like letters that say love one another. And we've got stuff for adults and kids. And the Shot Forward even has some Love is Greater Than Hate stuff. And it's all part of the Shot Forward Ally Fund. And all proceeds from each item are going to organizations that are fighting racial injustice in all forms. So that might be a place where you can begin, where you can buy a shirt that you can put on every day and be a reminder to yourself of how you want to be and what you need to do to contribute to what's happening right now. But you don't have to do that. That's just an option. I just want y'all to go check it out, theshotforward.com, and then you can click on the Ally Fund. It's right next to Father's Day, and click on Ally Fund. And I'm so proud of Stevenson. His little handwriting is so cute. He did such a great job. So that is one way you can help. But there are tons of other ways that cost no money where you can be the change. So my friend Lisa, who I did the Outweigh series with here on the podcast about disordered eating, she is at The Well Necessities on Instagram, and she sends out a newsletter to her Fork the Noise community about every week. And it's always full of great information. I love her newsletters. They're amazing and thorough. And she's so careful with her words. That's one thing I appreciate about her so much. And at the end of the newsletter, she had this written in all caps: "We cannot be both our best selves and emotionally frazzled at the same time." So she urged us, please, in the midst of everything that's going on in the world, do not forget to make time and space for you. She reminded us that it's not selfish and it's how we will win. And then she concluded with some mindfulness tips that you can take into account during this time. And for me, I want to share them with you as you roll into the weekend, just to make sure you take some time for self-care. So this is what Lisa put: get outside. Go for a walk, a run, whatever it is that allows your body to connect with nature. Be intentional with media. Allow yourself a certain amount of screen time and consume media from voices you do not necessarily always agree with. Allow for time to decompress. Consume mindless television that isn't the news. That's where I would suggest maybe Billions or Real Housewives of Orange County, of Beverly Hills, of New York, something like that. But this is me talking, by the way, not Lisa's email. Now I'm back to the email. Make space for joy. Yes, joy, because joyful activities purely for you will allow your brain to better process the realities. Breathe. Notice when your breath gets short and carve out a few minutes of the day to focus on long, drawn-out breaths. This regulates the central nervous system. Body scan. Scan your body for tension. Now's a good time to maybe check your shoulders. Bring them up to your ears and then let them drop. And then let your stomach unclench and take up some space. Shake out your hands, your feet, your arms, your legs, even your jaw. Put down the phone. Leave it behind if you're doing household chores or you're eating meals or while you're out in nature. See if you can monotask. You can just focus on that one thing without being distracted by your phone. Your mornings matter. So the first thing you do in the morning matters. If you can avoid the news, the email, the phone, all the noise, please do this. This can look like lying in bed for 5 extra minutes just staring at the ceiling. And then have good bedtime hygiene. What we do in the hours leading up to bed really plays a role in the quality of our sleep. Avoid the cell phone as much as you can. Try a gratitude journal or just a blank journal in general or a fiction book. So if you've listened to the podcast for a while, you know that we have a 4 things gratitude journal, which is really easy and a great thing to do before bed, but you don't even have to have our journal to do it. But if you want one, those are available. But if you get a blank journal, you could just, if you're intimidated by it, just start with 4 things, just like we do in ours. RadioAmy.com is where you can find that stuff. But I mean, it's also up on the shop for it as well, if you're there for Be the Change stuff. And again, all the proceeds from the Ally Fund are going directly to organizations that are fighting the racial injustice, like The Conscious Kid, Be the Bridge, George Floyd Memorial Fund, NAACP Legal Defense Fund, and the Loveland Foundation. I'll just leave you with this quote from Angela Davis. "It is not enough to be non-racist. We must be anti-racist." And let's all just be open to continuing to be willing to listen, to learn, and stand up against systemic racism, because we need to be the change.